Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? Even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved play time off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
JLab Audio is personal tech designed for you that fits your life, looks cool, and offers surprisingly awesome value.
Imagine the products and features you actually want and make sure the entire experience of owning them is a great one.
A new legacy in sound. JLab's new luxury over-ear headphones, seamlessly blending innovation and lab quality sound.
Over here at Fake Doctors Real Friends, we love our JLab Audio headphones. They feature over 70 hours of playtime, four different colorways to choose from, and three noise control modes. Use Real Friends for 25% off your order. Visit JLab.com to find your kind of tech.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card.
You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases,
and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn.
Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval terms. Apply.
Here's some stories about a show we made, about a bunch of docs and nurses and a janitor who loved to hate. I said, here's the stories that we all should know. So gather around to hear our Scrubs Rewatch show with Zach and Donno.
Hello.
I was just crying watching you, so this is a little surreal.
I'm not that ugly.
We like that. Well, hey everybody, we'll just dive in. We'll sit here.
I'll go over there.
I was gonna have it be formal, but you know what? Let's just do it informally. Hello, listeners. Welcome to a special version of Fake Doctors, Real Friends. Unfortunately, the only time we could do this is on Sunday, right before our premiere, and Donald is at a basketball tournament with his son. As we all know, his son is just incredible at basketball, and it's Donald's dream, and he wanted to be here so badly, but he's at a big tournament with Rocco. But we do have the fantabulous Joelle, Monique, and DJ Daniel.
Hi, guys.
Happy to be here, of course.
And this is really special because if those of you who listen to the podcast know how important this whole journey of this movie has been for me. We're going to go deep and talk about my journey of writing it, which a lot of you have followed because I have been writing it the entire time we've been doing this podcast. And it's no secret that Florence and I were partners and we did the whole pandemic together and the whole experience of Nick together. And we made this beautiful piece of art. Well, at least I think it's beautiful, and I hope you all like it. And so I just wanted to bring Florence on. Florence, hi.
Ba-da-da-ba-dum. I'm here instead of Donald.
Yes.
I'm the replacement.
Yes.
Amazing.
Your personalities are both vivacious.
Loud.
Yeah.
Attention-seeking.
Yes. Yes.
Hi, you guys. How you doing?
Hi. Very well.
Doing good.
Very well.
Yeah, yeah. To Daniel's point, there were lots of tears as we were texting each other while we were watching. We're like, oh my gosh, Florence is so talented. I got to read the script. I have questions about what happened to one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah, well, don't do any. We have to be careful not to do spoilers.
No spoilers.
But of course,
spoilers.
I want you guys to weigh in because, you know, Joelle, I have to thank you. Joelle's a very talented writer. And I in the script stage, I said, hey, I'm getting my writing friends' input. Please read this and give me any thoughts you have, because I did that with a myriad of people just to kind of get notes and thoughts from other talented people. So, Joelle, it must have been cool for you to see it realized.
It was cool because, so, like, your scripts are very detailed and visual. And so you got like a full like idea, like a movie mind map, if you will, of what was happening. And so I'm watching the film and I'm like, yeah, this is what I read. This is great. This is sort of how I imagined it. That's different than how I imagined it, but it's really cool. And then there was a moment where I was like, wait, did I miss a scene? It was one of my favorite scenes reading it in the script. And then it didn't make it to the screen. And I was like, what happened? I'm sure there's a very valid reason. But yeah.
Just give a hint. What scene was it? So I know which scene you're talking about.
I can also cut it out.
Yeah, cut it.
Or just do like,
I don't think it spoils anything, but let me know, Zach. Molly Shannon makes an important phone call. So Molly Shannon pays Flo's mom in the film, and she makes an important phone call to try to help her daughter, and it's so moving and well written. But I know sometimes even like the best written stuff or the best performed stuff, you're like, over time or for the pacing of the film, it just doesn't make it. What happens is
you know, we shot this movie in 26 days,
right?
And so that's what happens the analogy I always use is it's like a scavenger hunt. You go out and in 26 days, for minimum 12 hours, you race and race and race and collect as much stuff as you can, right? And then you get back to, and you're like out of breath, and you get back to the edit room and then you're like, what did we get?
Yeah.
And what often happens is once you do the assembly, it's 2.5, 3 hours long. And so that's when, you know, most filmmakers will tell you a movie is made in the edit room. That's when you start to go, okay, what of this giant 3-hour piece of clay, where is our 2-hour movie? Mm-hmm. And you take stuff out and then you go, put that back. And then you take big chunks out because, I mean, a half hour to 45 minutes is a lot of screen time.
It's a lot, yeah.
But that's where you really truly hone in on which story you're going to tell with your 2 hours, you know?
Also, sometimes as an actor, when your stuff is cut, even if it's not seen or shown, and that's also really sad, it does give you a piece of perspective to the character that no one else does, and it gets you from A to B without the audience seeing. And actually, sometimes it's just as much for you as it is for what it serves to the storyline. So actually, you come out at the end of the story, even if that scene is not seen, with a deeper understanding of who you're playing and where they were before that scene and after that scene. So it actually does serve a purpose, even if it's not in the movie.
Yeah, and it's heartbreaking sometimes because, you know, I cut scenes, like you said, Joelle, I cut a scene that Joelle loved, and that scene is amazing. And maybe one day, I don't know if in the streaming days they even do cut scenes. Do they? They probably do.
Some streaming channels. Me too. Yeah, Disney Plus actually does a lot of it.
Yeah, I'd always watch the cut scenes or scenes that didn't make it, and they'd be the best bloopers on there.
Well, what's nice is like when you love a movie and you love the characters and you're kind of like, I want more.
Mm.
Obviously, with a streaming series, there'll be another season. But with a movie, I guess you can go, well, show me the cutscenes. I at least want to watch those, you know?
For sure. It gives you an entirely different perspective sometimes to the characters, sometimes to the directors or writers' visions. Yeah, I love cutscenes. Wait, before we go any further, though, you guys should like, what for people who don't know, if somehow you've been living under a rock and didn't see a trailer, what is this movie about? What's it called? It's a good person.
Okay. So the reason we're doing this, for those of you who might be joining us for the first time because you heard Florence Pugh was on our show.
Hi, I'm Florence.
This is normally a rewatch Scrubs podcast. But during lockdown, I wrote a movie for Florence Pugh called A Good Person. And Florence, I always wrote it with her in mind. And when I gave it to Florence, she became a producer of the film and was incredible. It was very incredibly collaborative. She was giving me notes that were very helpful. She was giving me script ideas. And her character is a singer-songwriter, not as a career, but as a sort of a way of dealing with her emotions and her almost like journaling. She writes music. And so I asked Florence if she would, because she is a song. Well, do you want to say?
Yeah, I'll say.
Already hear her interrupting me. Yes. So Florence will now take over.
Well, that's not who she is, Allison.
Well, you tell me. You're Allison. You tell me.
I'm Allison. I'm going to say. So there's a beautiful script. I wasn't allowed to read it until it was completed. Zach was writing it during the pandemic, and he'd go down to the office and would write for like 4 hours or 5 hours a day, and would come back up and would be very, very excited to share with me all the things that he had learned about these characters. And it was at the same time when he was starting the podcast, so he'd go down sometimes in the morning and then would come back in the afternoon and would say, I've written this amazing scene between you and Daniel. And then we'd discuss it and chew the fat and talk about why that's amazing, where that could go. And so I kind of was very much a part of the story from the beginning and understood these characters on a deeper level than if I'd just been given the script one day. And when I finally got the script, Alison goes through a load of amazing and awful interactions with these characters that she meets throughout this story, all because of an awful tragedy that happens at the very beginning of the movie. And she is in such a mental state that I've never even come close to or seen really before. And I think for me, I really had to try and imagine what it is that I would be feeling if I was in that position and if I had affected people's lives in the way that she did. And I guess just to figure out if I was on the right path, I wrote a song for me in my life. I've always digested life or falling in love or going through heartbreaks and with songwriting. And it's been like my diary form, I suppose. And so with this, I was like, okay, I'm gonna write something and try and get in the headspace of Alison, and showed it to Zach, played it to Zach, and Zach said, "That's great. Can it be in the movie?" Which I had no intention of it actually being in the movie.
I don't remember like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I do, because I digested it. I was digesting the character like that. I remember asking you, is this how she is feeling?
Well, but I feel as I always wanted her to be a singer.
She was always going to be like a piano player.
Yeah. Well, anyway, however it occurred, Florence wrote these two incredible songs in the character, which is something just really unique that, doesn't happen very often, that your lead actress can get in the headspace of the character and then write a piece of music that the character might write and then perform it in the movie. I thought that was really just special.
Mm. It's a unique form of collaboration, I think, specifically in like cinema for a song from an actor to appear. And it's really lovely and it's so wonderful to hear you sing, Florence. I wonder, so you knew Zach was working on the script, but you couldn't read it until it was done. Am I right in assuming this is the first like script where a character was written with you in mind to play the character?
I've had people write scripts and have me in mind of the role when they've written it, which is very flattering and wonderful. And maybe they had me in mind to act in it. And that's a different thing. Zach wrote with the intention of having my voice and the essence of me coming through in a character. I think that was the difference there.
Yeah. I really just, I just think Florence is an incredible actress. And so I wanted to write something to her. And because I know her so well, as I was writing, and I've never done this, the two other features I've directed four movies. The third one, Going in Style, I didn't write. It was a studio heist comedy. But the two others I've written, and Wish I Was Here, I should note, I wrote with my incredibly talented brother, Adam Braff. But those were, written for me. They were things I was going through and dealing with, and I knew that I'd be playing the character. So for the first time, I wrote something wanting to deal with things I was dealing with and battling, the grief of losing my sister and my father in the last 4 years. And then, of course, as while I was writing this, all of this happened with losing Nick to COVID, our friend who was living on our property. So I wanted to write about all this stuff, not tell those specific stories, but write about the grief that I was battling and people I loved were battling. Looking at Amanda Klutz, Nick's widow, looking at my mom who would sit by my sister's bedside every day. I that was just what bubbled up for me in the pandemic was wanting to write about standing back up after trauma and grief, but also with my own tone, try and find a way to find the humor in it because I didn't want it to be too maudlin. When you hear me talk about those subjects, you might be like, oh my God, this is so heavy. And don't get me wrong, the movie is emotional, but also there's a lot of...
Yeah.
No, but I mean, you guys can attest to it that there's a lot of humor in it as well.
Oh, of course.
There is a lot of humor in here as well.
That's what you do so well is write lightness when people are in such darkness. That's why I think it's so easy to watch your movies that are about really depressing shit.
Yeah,
I think what I really enjoyed about it was the messiness involved with like healing and standing back up. Oh, I feel like a lot of times when we see it mapped onto films, it's, you know, a rising arc and then you reach a peak and then you're better and that's totally fine. But in real life, it's a lot more complex. I think the most emotional scene for me is, again, without spoiling anything, you go to a group, like Alice and the character goes to a group to get some help and figure things out. And she's been encouraged to, for the first time, like, speak her truth. They're like, hey, you have to contribute if you're going to be here. And it's such a vulnerable place. And Florence, you obviously played that so well. But then what's also happening underneath is all the things she doesn't know yet, all the lies she's still telling to herself. And it's such, if you've ever been in a position of having to take a first big step, it's just, it's huge. It's really hard. And it makes you feel like just, oh, it's so awkward and I'm uncomfortable. And then there's also the absolute certainty that there'll be failure following that. And I think all of that somehow is embodied in a single moment. And it was really brilliant and beautiful.
Thank you. I really wanted that scene. I mean, she hasn't been honest for maybe about an hour. She hasn't really truly spoken. And she's very good at getting out of conversations and getting out of being, you know, put on the hot seat. And I think with that scene, it was really, really important. And I really wanted that scene to be like, she has to speak. She has to be truly honest and actually talk about what she thinks she is and what she knows she is. Otherwise, I think after a while, the audience would have been a bit like, oh my God, she's getting out of another opportunity of talking about how, you know, how flawed she is. And I think that moment, you know, to film as well was hugely cathartic. It was a scene that I was really, really nervous to shoot, partly because we all know what those scenes look like when we watch movies. We know that it is a sensitive scene. It's a sensitive topic. And also, just in all honesty, like the reason why I get scared about playing characters that I play is because I love the ugliness in humans and I love the rawness of the characters that I get to play. And that scene specifically is something that like has to be done perfectly. Like we have to nail it and it has to be achieved because you don't know who's going to be watching this movie and you don't know who it's going to affect, who it's going to help, who it's going to hurt.
Right.
And a scene like that, both Morgan's share and my share really needs to be like delicately held and delicately directed. And also we kind of have to nail it. You can't get scenes like that wrong.
That's so well said. And also I feel like someone once said to me, the greatest scenes of all times in movies that you love, whether it be Brando or, you know, De Niro in Raging Bull, just insert your favorite scene there. That was just like a regular Tuesday, you know? And the actor got up and went to their trailer and went to hair and makeup. And they're like, it's time to do that scene. I could have been a contender. I think that's my line. And, and I feel that way with Florence and Morgan's performances in this movie, because there's some scenes that you would just drop your jaw at, you know, and I'm someone who loves actors. I've dedicated my life to not just being an actor, but just loving great actors. I go to the theater a ton, as you listeners know. I love it. And so those scenes, I mean, there's several scenes in this movie where you're just watching some of the finest acting. And I think, you know, as a director, you're so nervous. Like, okay, today's a scene that's super intense. And, you know, is Morgan in the right headspace? Is Florence in the right headspace? What was their morning like? You know, was the coffee shit and they're in a bad mood? Like you just, you know, as a director, you're so nervous. As an actor, you're more nervous, of hard scenes. But it's funny, I was in a movie, one of my first movies was a movie called Broken Hearts Club. And Greg Berlanti, who's now become one of the biggest showrunners in town, but it was his first directing thing. And he always say, like, you have a big scene today. You ready for your big scene today? And it was like,
you would do that to me.
No, I wouldn't. Not on the day.
Yes, you would.
Oh, God. But anyway, my memory of it is, I'm sorry I did that to you, because I remember Greg being like, and I'd be like, Greg, please, you're building it up so much. And now I'm
now making it work.
Now I'm scared. but Florence, you do deliver every single time. And it's just such a joy to watch it happen because, some actors need to stay in character, and there's no right way or wrong way to accomplish this very hard task of being vulnerable on cue, go. Some actors, as we all know, need to stay in that for the day or stay in it for the length of the movie. And, you know, both Florence and Natalie Portman are wonderful actors, says that I've had a chance to work with, who both can magically, I mean, I want you to speak to this because it's your process, but Florence also can do something that's such an incredible moment and then kind of take a breath and, like, you know, turn around and talk to the dolly grip about, like, you know, if, you know, how was his dinner last night and what he ate, you know? And I guess for me, as someone who can't necessarily be that easy with it, how do you do that?
I was actually talking about this in an interview yesterday. A woman asked me a similar question. And I hadn't really put that much thought into it, but I think, I really love living in the adrenaline of a moment and a scene, and I really love that magic energy that happens between the actor and myself in front of a camera right then and there. And part of the thrill is that I get to live in it for 2 or 3 minutes or a minute and a half. And then it's almost like wrestling, and then you go, okay, break. And then I kind of have to get out of it, just almost so that I can jump in it in the same excited and thrilling and energizing way as the last time. Unless, of course, it's like a major moment where I need to go over something physically. I think I'm a very physical actor. Like, I need to know how I'm going to react to something. So, for example, in the wrestling scene with Molly and I, like, figuring out how I'm going to turn and ache or move, like, that's really important to me. And I'll definitely prep over that. But when it's about catching that right moment, I love living in the adrenaline of that moment for that second, for that scene, and then drop, like, and come back to it when I can do it again.
Yeah. It's a very, very special skill. I, as an actor, find that I can't really do that as well. The times where I have had to do major emotional scenes, in Garden State, for example, I ended up making it about the single tear in the tub, and she collects it with the cup, which ended up being great. But what I had initially written it as was that he has a full emotional breakdown. Mm-hmm. And that happened in the wide master shot. I was so present. Natalie was so good. Mm-hmm. We had no crew in there except the two cameramen and a boom mic. And I had this really emotional release. And then I, the director, moved the camera in tight to cover it, and I just couldn't find it again.
That. It's so horrible.
And so I said to myself, as a young director, I said, you know, if that's not happening, then that's not the scene. Mm. Because I have a very big pet peeve, and I'm going to hand it on to you, audience, now. You will see it, and it'll bother you, too. Actors who are crying with their voice, but there's no tears coming out of their eyes. Mm.
Sure. Crocodile tears.
I really have, like, and it's a big scene, and you're like, oh, then they should have just pivoted. And the character, if the actor isn't feeling it or it's not happening, then you need to pivot, and that character's not crying.
But as an actor, I've always loved that about you. And I mean, you told me that anecdote years before we worked together. And I've always loved that, because usually in script, especially as a young actress, you'd always get this scene in, even in audition scenes, where, like, she'd be saying something and then the direction would be like, and then a tear falls down her face. And you're like, I don't know people that actually cry openly. I don't. I always hide my face or I go in a bathroom. Like, you don't see people usually just crying all the time. It doesn't happen. It just happens in movies. And I loved when you kind of release that pressure off it. It's like, if it doesn't happen, it's not supposed to happen, because
you even told me to
take
it out of the script.
Yeah, I did.
Which I thought was really cool. She said, because there were moments in my screenplay where it would say, you know, Allie's eyes well. And she goes, would you mind just taking all of that out? Because I need to feel it naturally. If it happens on the day, it'll happen on the day. But when I see it written, it makes me uncomfortable. Like, it's a, I totally think that's wise.
It feels like you then have to tick a box with it. It's like you then, I think obviously, for example, if there's like a direction in a script where it's like, gunshots go off, everybody's terrified. Like, of course, that makes sense. But
yeah. I'm talking specifically about emotion.
No, I know, and I'm saying, but with emotion, it's like, it's completely dependent on if the script gets you there, B, if it's making sense with you and the other actor. And I've always loved that about you just taking the pressure off. I think it's a very kind thing to do as a director.
Well, thank you.
I was just going to ask, do you think it makes the writing stronger too? Because you can cue like, oh, and then they cry. Okay, so now we know that the character is sad versus you had to construct the dialogue in such a way that it was emoting to both the actor performing and the audience.
In all honesty, I think if someone says and then they cry, I think that's quite lazy. It's like, well, why are they just crying?
Well, I would say that I think that's a really well said, Joelle, because I find as an actor, there are moments where I'm just reading the page and my eyes will well. And I'm like, wow, that's been written in such a way that I'm naturally going to feel that. But I just think, you know, and this, if you're a young filmmaker or an actor listening to this, my two cents after making a bunch of stuff is, you know, if you expect the actor to cry or have a moment, it has to come naturally. And then if it's not happening on the day, by all means, do not have the person make crying noises and have no tears in their eyes, because that to me is so false. And you will now, I'm sorry, I'm going to ruin a lot of movies for you. You will see it all over the place now. You'll be like, but why are their eyes not teary?
And it goes up here like this.
Yeah. Now, if you absolutely, if it is script dependent, that the person's eyes are well, there's this thing, there's a cheat way where you can blow, it's like a menthol thing that, and it makes your eyes cry.
But you have to shoot and then you have to say action and then the tear comes out. Like, you don't have any time. It's not like you can do a 2-minute scene and then it wells up.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't happen. And then also nowadays, it's true, you'll see them now too, the age of CGI tears has arrived.
Oh my God, digital they're tears horrible. Are weird.
Oh my God. I know, but I got to say one thing about CGI tears, that is good. And this, there is one thing. You should not use CGI tears as totally fake. But there are moments when you are cutting a piece where someone is crying with continuity, and the most amazing take is natural and real. And then you need to cut to the side angle for whatever reason, and there's no tears, you're fucked. Unless you have this new invention. So then it is fine to match.
Maybe that's just movie making.
No. I'm okay with a CGI tier if it is matching continuity for a actual emotion. That's my personal take, isn't it? But I can tell you right now, we had no budget for CGI tears in this movie.
Good.
Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? Even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved play time off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com. JLab Audio is personal tech designed for you that fits your life, looks cool, and offers surprisingly awesome value.
Imagine the products and features you actually want and make sure the entire experience owning them is a great one.
Always packing the most functionality and fun into every product at a truly accessible price.
Zach, let me tell you, JLab has these new luxury over-ear headphones called the JBuds Lux ANC.
Yep.
These seamlessly blend innovation and lab quality sound, all in these sleek headphones that guarantee an elevated listening experience. You can connect to multiple devices, customize your sound in the JLab app, and get over 70 hours of playtime.
Well, buddy, those sound pretty cool, but have you heard of the JBuds ANC3? They are the smallest smart active noise canceling true wireless earbuds you can find. You can also connect to multiple devices, but these come with a built-in USB-C charging cable and a noise canceling microphone for crisp, clear phone calls. Use Real Friends for 25% off your order. Visit JLab.com to find your kind of tech.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card.
You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases,
and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn.
Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Can we go back a little bit? I know you've rehashed
what have I done?
Your career before, but just for our audience who might not know, I just think your story is so incredible. and I know you've spoken about it before, but just for our audience who might not know it, will you talk about how you were discovered? You were in school, and they were going to make a movie with Maisie Williams.
So I was definitely at school. I was 16. Was I 16? I was 17 years old. And I was just finishing, I think, my second to last year of school. And everybody around town was talking about this tape. Have you done this tape? Have you done this tape? And essentially, the BBC were making a movie called The Falling, directed by Carol Morley, starring Maisie Williams. And they needed to fill a school's worth of girls. They needed to find faces that could be possibly from 1969, just like different, interesting, normal faces. You didn't need to be anything special other than maybe you fit the look of a girl being at this school during this era. And they basically just needed to find as many girls as possible, some just to be essays, background, and some to be extras, and some to be characters, but they were just trying to find new talent. They didn't want anybody that was recognizable. And honestly, it was like 2 months of everybody saying, I've done the tape. I heard it's first come, first serve, like yada, yada, yada.
First
yada.
Come, first serve.
And every school from London to Oxford was talking about this tape. And it was, you just have to do a 1 minute tape and you have to say who you are, what your name is, what you're good at, what school you're at, where you are. And that's it. You had it in that tape. And if you didn't hear anything back, you didn't hear anything back. And my brother had been in the industry for a fair few years prior to this, and I'd been watching his, you know, entrance into the industry and just how hard it was and how cutthroat it was and how you'd do hundreds of tapes every 2 weeks and no one would ever get back to you, or they might do, and you have to be there at Friday at 9 a.m. to do this, you know, 10-minute audition, and then they also might not tell you again. Just like the brutal reality of what it is to be a young actor or just a new actor in the industry. And my mum had very much helped him out of figuring that out as well. And I remember when this tape was going around, I was like, absolutely not, I am not doing this tape. Like, I know how hard it is because I can see how hard it is for my brother. And there is no way in hell that anyone is going to be giving one of us random girls a role in this movie. And I remember the deadline was on Saturday and I got back home from school. And my mom was like, have you done the tape? I literally rolled my eyes and I was like, you're kidding. You know about this tape as well? Like, no, I haven't done the tape. What do you mean? She was like, what do you mean you haven't done the tape? I was like, well, Mum, you know better than anyone. Like, why the hell am I doing this Leifer audition? I'm not going to get it. No one's going to get it. It's going to go to someone famous. Why are we doing this? This is ridiculous. And she was like, no, I know you're not going to get it, but why don't we just give it a go? Because this is something that you want to do. And maybe we can just start practicing, you know, being on camera and talking to camera and just start figuring it out, because at some point we're going to have to figure it out. And I was like begrudgingly going like, oh, fine, okay. And I had like greasy hair and a sweaty mustache and I was so not okay to do a tape. And I handed in this tape and I said it and I even made a mistake in it. I forgot how old I was. And my mum shouts from off camera going, how old? And I go, oh, 17. And then on Monday I got an email from Shaheen Bey Casting, who cast the movie. And she said that Carol Morley wanted to meet me in 2 weeks' time. Here are the sides. You get a meeting with the director. And I was like absolutely dumbfounded because this is not what I've been telling everybody at school. Anyway, I went in and then after that, it was like 6 months of re-auditions and chemistry tests and all of this stuff. And it was mind-blowing to me. I'd never done any of this before. And I'd never gone to an audition before. And when I went to my audition, I remember I was wearing this little gray crop top. Like a little like turtleneck gray crop top. And by the time I went into the room, my sweat patches were down below my boobs. And I was just like, I was so terrified. And I'd caught a train with my mum to London, which was really big. And I was like, just all the scary stuff that, you know, as a 17-year-old, you're not usually doing job auditions.
But were you excited?
I was so excited, but it was just, I was so nervous that because of my, because of not knowing how to do it, that they were going to catch me out. Yeah. And I did my first audition. And I remember literally like the day later, I got another email saying, Carol Morley would like to see you again. And then each time it was like, okay, wow, got to get in the mode of this, learning all my lines. You know, it was just, it was nuts, absolutely nuts. And then I didn't find out until end of September. So I handed in the tape in June, maybe May, and I didn't find out until September. So it was a whole summer of like, wow, coming in. And then I got the movie and I got the supporting role and it was I was playing opposite Maisie Williams and it was like, whoa, I'm in a movie and I'm missing 2 months of school and this is so cool. And I lived in a house with all these beautiful young actors.
And Game of Thrones was happening, right?
Game of Thrones was happening. Maisie Williams was and is like the toppest name that anyone knows of. And we were just living in a house together and it was just quite possibly one of the most amazing, eye-opening, oh my God, yes, this is exactly what I want to do. Thank God this has been my daydream since I was like six. Aww. And it was just so cool to think that the thing that I had been dreaming of doing was actually really fun and I really loved it. And I remember being on set, same thing as now, asking, you know, what a prop master is and what they had for dinner and can I help you out and can I help clean things and asking, but I just constantly asking questions. What's a boom operator? Like all of these fascinating things. And I would go back home and I'd be so excited and high from the day that I wouldn't be able to sleep. And I remember my alarm would go off at 3:30 or 4 and I'd leap out of bed just out of excitement. And then when we completed the movie, I ended up, Shaheen Baig very, very kindly knew that she wanted to get me an agent and she wanted to help me get an agent. And so she set up these meetings and I had an agent. And the whole plan usually was that I was going to go to drama school and then after that I'd probably get an agent or try and get an agent. But now I had this agent. So it was like, okay, well, all I need to do now is finish school, which I did not want to do. My mom was like, babe, just finish it. I don't care what you get. Just finish it. Go to school. Get it done. And then we can crack on with it. And so that's what happened. So in the last few months of school, I'd be going to do auditions on the weekends or going to do this or that. And then
And you never did go to drama school.
I never went to drama school. I had my agent and I got doing auditions. And then I obviously had to realize that you don't ever get the first job you audition for. And then I had to figure out how to actually do auditions.
You had the ultimate case of, well, it's not luck because we've seen what's become of your career, but you did have a case of like getting the first thing you auditioned for.
Oh, but I mean, when young actors ask me like, oh, how did you get into the industry? I go, do not listen to me at all. Like I think every way into the industry is a fluke and every way in is like hard work no matter how which way it comes, because ultimately even if you get an easy way in, it's what you do with when you have the microphone and it's what you do with when you have the stage. And it's like if you're shit, it's not going to continue. And I think for me, I was at the right place at the right time, right age, with a director that wanted to find someone that was new and had a new face. And I had a casting team that just actually wanted to support me and get me an agent. And Shaheen then cast me in Fighting With My Family. She cast me in Lady Macbeth, like all these movies that really made my career.
Yeah. But also, I mean, she discovered that you had a natural, just
I knew
God-given
what to do when
talent.
I had the mic. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, how long after was Lady Macbeth?
Lady Macbeth was 2 years later. So I did The Falling when I was 17, finished school, turned 18, and then I had just a year of doing auditions and trying to figure out if I can do this, if I'm good at it. And then I did a pilot in the first month or two when I turned 19. That didn't go. And then pretty much like 2 months later, I started shooting Lady Macbeth, which then...
So for those of you who, I'm going to interrupt you, just say, for those of you who haven't seen Lady Macbeth, you really need to see this movie. It is really, truly, The Falling was Florence's first job. And but Lady Macbeth is what launched her onto everyone's radar. And it is an incredible film. It doesn't have anything to do with Shakespeare's Macbeth, although the character is, the title is probably a nod to behaviors of the character.
Lady Macbeth.
Oh, it's a book.
Matesque.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a play?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's actually an opera and a play. Yeah.
It's an opera and a play. And it was adapted to a very low budget independent film. I think it takes place almost entirely in one house.
One house and a few moors, and we shot it in like 2 and a bit weeks for $250,000.
Yeah, so it cost $250,000 to make, which if you don't know movie budgeting is minuscule, and 2 weeks time. And it's just the ultimate example. I'm not just saying this because Florence is here. It is just the ultimate example of if the writing is brilliant and the acting is brilliant, you can have people on the edge of your seat and have a movie take place in one house. And every single person who loves actors and acting who saw that movie said, who the hell is this person? Because it was an incredible, incredible performance.
That's very kind
of you. And you were nominated for a BAFTA, I believe. Or did you win a BAFTA?
I won a BIFFA and I was nominated for a BAFTA.
Yeah. At how old?
Well, I did the movie when I was 19.
So there you go. Yeah. That's pretty incredible.
Thank you.
I highly, highly recommend that film to everyone.
And my scene partners is Naomi Aki.
Hey.
Yeah, the wonderful Naomi Aki and Cosmo Jarvis, who are doing wonderful work. And every time I see them at events, it's like seeing like your sibling from when you were younger and before you got adopted. It was like, it's truly like, oh my God, there you are from the past. And Naomi is doing incredible work and she's so unbelievably talented and beautiful. And it's been so wonderful watching her rise after playing Whitney. Did you see it?
No, I didn't see the film, but I know that she's an incredible actress because she's incredible in the movie. And I've watched, I think some other things with her. So I do, and then of course, Midsommar, so many people love that movie.
Yeah. If you're weird, then you love it.
I think non-weird people love it too.
There were some people come up to me and they're like, oh my God, Midsommar is my favorite movie ever.
It's the
watch
greatest
it.
Romance
I watch
all
it
time.
All the time. And I'm like, you're really weird.
I accept it. I cheer every time in the finale.
You do?
And every time I watch it with a guy, they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, it's just so beautiful. She chose herself and it's so lovely. I love this movie.
This movie has spawned more fan art than any other film I've ever seen.
You know, he used to collect it. He used to collect the fan art and put them on a shelf. It was very cute.
Well, there's so much fan art for Midsommar that Florence would look at some of it, but I would go to deep dive because I just thought it was, I mean, there's so much talent, you know, there's sculptures of her. There's actually.
He would get things made, like little sculptures.
I didn't commission them. I would like find them and be like, how could Florence not own this? She needs it. And I would DM the artist and be like, are you selling this? Because I know Florence Pugh and she should own it. And the person would be like, Florence is going to own this? And I'd be like, I am not taking it. Your art is beautiful. You name the price and I always obviously paid and then paid them probably more than they were asking. But there were a few things that were just...
He got me earrings, Danny earrings.
Well, there was a pin. There were pins.
I've got the pin I've got the little sculpture.
There's a sculpture. You could go on Etsy and just go down a Midsommar art wormhole.
The amazing posters from all around the world. Didn't you get me the Japanese movie poster?
There's a Japanese... I don't know if it was their official poster or if it was a special commission. But it was gorgeous. You can Google image it if you're curious. And I hunted that down and bought that for you. I just think that's so cool. I geek out like Florence, like with the Black Widow toys. She's not nearly as interested as I am.
Like I am. I look at it. I'm like, oh, that's little me. That's cute.
No, I remember pulling out the Lego figurine. Now, first of all, Legos were my favorite thing as a child, and I still love them as an adult. Obviously, Donald and I—that's another thing. Donald and I share in common is our love of Legos. But when the Black Widow Lego set came out, I bought it and I was running to Florence like, you're a fucking Lego figure. And she's like, that's so cool. That's so cool. I'm like, you're not excited enough.
But I got to see you excited, which was just as good.
Oh my gosh. I listen, on the life goals list, I'm honored to be a Funko Pop, but I really would love to be a Lego figure.
Hear that, Lego? Are you hearing it?
I don't know why Lego has not made the Freck from Obi-Wan set yet.
What's going on, guys?
Yeah.
Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? Even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved playtime off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com. JLab Audio is personal tech designed for you that fits your life, looks cool, and offers surprisingly awesome value.
Imagine the products and features you actually want and make sure the entire experience owning them is a great one.
Always packing the most functionality and fun into every product at a truly accessible price.
Zach, let me tell you, JLab has these new luxury over-ear headphones called the JBuds Lux ANC.
Yep.
These seamlessly blend innovation and lab quality sound, all in these sleek headphones that guarantee an elevated listening experience. You can connect to multiple devices, customize your sound in the JLab app, and get over 70 hours of playtime.
Well, buddy, those sound pretty cool, but have you heard of the JBuds ANC3? They are the smallest smart active noise canceling true wireless earbuds you can find. You can also connect to multiple devices, but these come with a built-in USB-C charging cable and a noise canceling microphone for crisp, clear phone calls. Use Real Friends for 25% off your order. Visit jlab.com to find your kind of tech.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Hey, listeners, how is your social battery right now?
It can be easy for people to ignore their social battery and spread themselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter.
Everyone has a different capacity for socializing and different ways of recharging. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time.
Either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/RealFriends today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/RealFriends.
But so talk a little bit about Black Widow, because as you know, Joelle and Donald in particular are Marvel mega fans.
Well, what do you want to know?
Yeah, we have the script for Thunderbirds. Do you want us to read it?
It's not Thunderbirds.
My gosh.
What's it called?
It's not Thunderbirds.
What's it called?
Thunderbolt.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Classic, come on.
Joelle, would you like us to perform the Thunderbolt screenplay for you right
just
now?
Just as long as it's not Thunderbirds.
Yes, please. Oh, my gosh.
Joelle, I'm giving you a moment to ask any of your Marvel questions on behalf of you and Donald.
She
obviously can't say much, but...
yes, okay.
Do you want to know who's in Thunderbolts? Are we allowed to say?
I don't even know who's in Thunderbolts.
I know just from reading the press releases.
I find out online. I'm like, okay, all right, that's how secret it
well,
is.
Well, this isn't a secret because I'll tell you stuff that has been on the interwebs that Harrison Ford is in it.
Yes, you told me that, actually.
Yes, my friend Harrison Ford. I believe, what is that amazing actress from The Bear?
Yes, she's in it. Oh, my God, I'm so excited.
Yes. What's her name?
Ayo Edebiri.
She's incredible.
So funny.
Fabulous.
I did squeal when I read that online.
I read that on the interweb. She's in it.
I'm going to be her best friend, even if I don't know how I'm going to make that happen.
I think
please
that you
make
I think
TikToks, Florence, because we need to see the drinking adventures of you and I.
Yeah.
She, man, I love The Bear, and she's just fantastic in it. I think
Sebastian Stan's in it.
Sebastian Stan, and I believe Wyatt Russell is in it.
Yes.
Is that a spoiler? I mean, that's it. I think that's on the interwebs.
That's on the interwebs. Is Stephen Yeun in this? Dude.
I think so.
And I bet you Julie Louis Dreyfus is probably in it.
Guys, this is tricky stuff.
Oh yeah, we don't want to get Miss Flo in trouble.
But I can talk about the one that I have already done, and the series that I was already done.
Yeah. So, what was that like? I mean, just for a lot of our audience does love Marvel.
Yeah.
And, so tell us just. You know, I know you've spoken about it a lot, but you know, what's it like to step into a movie that gargantuan? I mean, the movie, I remember watching that movie and being like, I just can't fathom the scale of this thing. When you guys are, when you in that sequence, for example, of the skydiving with Scarlett, and I mean, how the fuck did you, was that even done?
I don't know. I mean, I do know. So, yeah, I mean, saying yes to a project like that is all for the right reasons terrifying, because for me, it's a world that means so much to so many, and so many people know my character better than I'll ever know it. And Yelena had never been played before. It's also, you know, she's associated with Black Widow, with Scarlett's character, who also everybody has such a sensitive and tough time discussing her character because of how it all ended, and everybody's very sad about that. And so, yeah, getting involved with this film was like, oh, my God. Again, the same thing of like, I've got to get this really, really right, because I don't want to offend people and I don't want people to be upset and I don't want people to think that it should have been played by someone else. Like, that to me was the biggest fear. But just the nature of what the film was discussing and dissecting and tackling and everything to do with its storyline, female subjugation, trafficking. Like, it was just, I couldn't believe that Marvel were making a movie like that. And being very openly, we were openly discussing all of this in the script amongst our characters. And Scarlett obviously was very much involved in the movie and producer and actor in it. And then we had Kate Shortland, who was just a fantastic director. It just truly felt like one of those projects that wasn't just doing a superhero movie. It was like, we are discussing a lot and we are challenging a lot. And it was terrifying stepping into it, but I'm so, so glad that I did. Also, just the family that I got from it. Family of fans, family of all the people at MCU.
Did Scarlett share anything with you? I mean, obviously, I mean, something that you're willing to share, but did she knew that you were going to be stepping into these enormous shoes, obviously not taking over her character, but entering the Marvel universe in a giant way. Did she guide you in any way?
The best thing that I learned from her, and it was never ever, I mean, I'm sure that there were specific things that she told me, but I think the coolest thing about watching a woman that has been in the industry ever since she was a child and also in the MCU for a decade was just like her consistency of needing to have fun and needing to enjoy the whole process. Because otherwise I think you could possibly get too bogged down with it and it become too serious and it become too daunting. But I think for me, it was just really, when I stepped into the role, I was so stressed and I was so eager to be perfect and eager to train really, really hard and to learn how to do the in the middle of the air flip roll with my dagger out. And like, I really wanted to do and try and do all of my stunts and respect the craft and respect the stunties and give it my best shot. And I just remember her from the very beginning being like, you've got to enjoy it. You've got to, A, let the professionals do the things that they are professional for. So like, no, you're not going to be jumping out of a building. And B, just enjoy the process. Don't let it eat you. Don't be nervous about the world that you're stepping into, and know that these fans will love you. Like, that's why it's so wonderful. I remember we went to Comic-Con and I was so terrified because we'd be walking around with masks on or going around with cars and just the crowds of people that were there. And we'd only just kind of released the information that we were shooting and that it was me. And I remember being so nervous that people weren't going to like it or like me or want me to be the role. And I remember Scarlett and I would just hold hands behind the stage before we went out. And I was just holding her hand and we were watching our trailer go. And it was nice to see that she was nervous too. That was like quite cool. And then going out and just this sea of people, like, I couldn't see the back wall of the warehouse. I could not see the back.
You're talking Hall 8 at
Compton? Yeah.
Yeah.
I could not see the back wall. And it was just unbelievable, the instant adoration that all these people had for our movie that hadn't even come out yet. And we only showed them a small trailer. It was like, truly, I mean, it's because of that love and that support that makes doing those massive movies, I suppose, possible. But shooting it was nuts. We shot in so many different countries.
And by the way, you loved being with the stunt
I
folks,
loved it.
And they loved you, and you really trained hard.
I did.
And even though your stunt double did incredible work
you did. Michaela,
yeah,
unbelievable.
You did do a couple things. You did run. She did run down that wall
I
in that opening sequence.
I did run down the wall, yeah. But I also love doing it. It's so much fun. And hanging out with stunties is the coolest because, like,
the English call them stunties.
That's funny.
That's amazing, first of all. We need to upgrade our language here in the States. Stunties is much better. And, you know, Florence, I can tell you that I think, like, you and Jonathan Majors feel like the future of Marvel. I think these are the two characters that people have really globbed onto the most as we moved from, like, phase 4 to phase 5. And we're seeing it, like, grow and everything. I know there's this, like, especially because I think villains are sort of the new wave for Marvel. Like, we've had all the iconic heroes and their very shiny vestments and everything. Mm-hmm. It's fun to get some of it. Like, when you did Hawkeye, like, watching you with Haley was so much fun. I was like, this is the level of, like, cool, badass girls who feel very grounded, you know? I think there's something about specifically those two characters Those two characters specifically feel like, oh, hey, yes, we're like women and it's cool that we're here, but that has almost nothing to do with our story. It's we're not here because we're women. We're not here to try to like prove anything. We're just badasses independently of anything else. And that's been really fun to watch. I hope we get more of the two of you soon.
Oh, well, that was so fun to do. And I had such a small stint of shooting on that show. I mean, they were going on for months and I just popped in and did some Yelena stuff.
Here's a very funny Florence story. She shot Hawkeye and that sequence at the Rockefeller Center ice rink in Atlanta on a soundstage where they had recreated the giant thing. And she shot that whole sequence on a stage in Atlanta.
They made the whole thing to scale.
Well, not all of 30 Rock, but...
But the
rink, maybe.
The rink.
They built 30 Rockefeller Center?
Yeah.
The rink and the walls would get the blue walls, you know, all around. So
it was enormous. But anyway, but she had never been to the real ice rink at 30 Rock. And when we wrapped A Good Person?
Yeah.
We wrapped A Good Person and
we came to New York.
And Florence was like, I really want to go to the ice rink because I've been to it on the stage. What, am I telling
it
wrong?
No, you're telling it wrong.
All right, go ahead.
We were here with our friends, Jess and Carrie, and before we'd all go back to our corners of the world, we were like, okay, well, let's have a few Christmassy days. Let's go to a Christmas market. Let's go and have hot chocolates. And Zach was like, oh, I know what we can do. And Zach and Carrie booked us slots to go ice skating.
Aww. I didn't. Carrie did.
Carrie did. But it was like an exciting thing that we all did. And we're walking up and I'd kind of forgotten about it. And as we were walking, it was so Christmassy and we're all holding hands and it was just like so sweet. And then as we came up to the ice skating rink, I was like,
I've been here before.
We put on our ice skates and I go, guys, this is where I shot my action scene with Jeremy Renner. And everything was to scale. I was like, yes, so this is where the star came down on the ice and I kicked him in the face. And even the fountain, I was like, I have a picture of me by the fountain.
Yeah. She was like looking around the real 30 Rock. She's like, I've been here. Like, it's so funny.
But in Atlanta.
That's just a real experience.
I know. It was movie making.
Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? Even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved play time off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com. JLab Audio is personal tech designed for you that fits your life, looks cool, and offers surprisingly awesome value.
Imagine the products and features you actually want and make sure the entire experience owning them is a great one.
Always packing the most functionality and fun into every product at a truly accessible price.
Zach, let me tell you, JLab has these new luxury over-ear headphones called the JBuds Lux ANC.
Yep.
These seamlessly blend innovation and lab quality sound, all in these sleek headphones that guarantee an elevated listening experience. You can connect to multiple devices, customize your sound in the JLab app, and get over 70 hours of playtime.
Well, buddy, those sound pretty cool, but have you heard of the JBuds ANC3? They are the smallest smart active noise-canceling true wireless earbuds you can find. You can also connect to multiple devices, but these come with a built-in USB-C charging cable and a noise-canceling microphone for crisp, clear phone calls. Use Real Friends for 25% off your order. Visit jlab.com to find your kind of tech.
Let me tell you guys, my family loves our Helix sleep mattress. Ever since we've got it, we've had some of our best sleep yet.
The Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux Collection, the newly released Helix Elite Collection, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and even a mattress made just for kids.
So how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? Take the Helix Sleep Quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Everybody is unique, and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from. each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences.
Not only is the mattress the best I've slept on, but the setup was fast and easy. Helix mattresses are delivered in a box straight to your door for free.
Helix is offering 20% off of all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/realfriends and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Well, with our last few minutes, let's just circle back to our movie, yeah. A Good Person, which is coming out this Friday in theaters. Florence and I hope that you go and check it out in movie theaters.
Oh, you'll love it. I really think you will. And it will hopefully affect you in all the ways that you want it to.
I do think my just sales pitch for seeing it in the theater is there is something really magical, I believe, in sharing what this movie is about in a room full of people. You know, we've been traveling the country. I've just been on a major tour, and I'm watching it with audiences, and there's just something magical about when it's pin drop silent. Of course, in the emotional times when you hear people sniffling, then when there's humor and everyone has a laugh release. And, you know, people often say there's not enough movies for grown-ups out there. Well, I really tried to make one, and I that's my plea for you to please check it out in theaters. And, Joelle, did you have any more questions as a smart entertainment journalist you wanted to ask us?
I do. And again, Florence, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is your first producing credit, right?
It is.
Okay. So you've worked with a ton of women directors in your career. You've talked throughout this interview about your love and passion of just being on set and learning all of the little jobs. What did you love about producing? What are you excited to do again? And have you considered directing at all?
That is such a good question. Wow. Joelle, you nailed it.
They're all so ready.
Thank you.
It's funny. I have been dipping my toe in the producing world. I think it's something that I naturally end up doing anyway on a film. Like I want to be involved in things, even when obviously I've only got like the finished script and I can only now kind of help when we're shooting. But I think naturally over the years, I've always wanted to tweak things that aren't right or are right or could be better or have a say in who do we think should be cast for this. Like it's something that I very much, not because I want control, but because I want to be a part of making it perfect. Like I really do want every line to be fantastic for everyone. And I think I have a good handle on dialogue. I think I love when it makes sense and everything clicks. And I think with this movie, when we were working on it together, we had been discussing some character arcs or something and we were just chatting it, going through it. And I was like, Zach, I think I'm a producer on this movie. And he was like, and I was like, no, I think I am. I'm a producer on this movie. And then he was like, yeah, of course you can be a producer on the movie. And so, but also just chatting about like casting. I love figuring out who's going to be right for what and who deserves to have a role like that. And I think like—
One thing that was amazing was, sorry to interrupt you, but she goes, you know, Florence is friends with Alex Wolff, and we had this amazing scene for someone to come in and do. And she goes, do you think Alex would do it? And I go, oh my God, Alex Wolff would be perfect for that scene. And obviously so many fans would love to see you and Alex Wolff go toe-to-toe in a scene. And she's like, well, let me ask him. And she asked him, and Alex was like, oh my God, I like Zach's work a lot. I love you. Like, I'm in. And she hangs up with him. She's like, I'm the best producer.
Yeah. I was getting roles in, and every time I would do something, I'd put the phone down and be like, Zach, I'm a producer.
Yes.
But she was. She was. Not only was she really helpful in casting, but a lot of script stuff. I mean, talk about the cutting of the hair conversation.
Mm. Cutting of the hair. Yeah, I wanted that. I wanted to do that. I think when you're that low, there are so many levels of trying to fix yourself or trying to change something because you're kind of doing anything, then look at what it is that you are and what it is that you actually need to change. And I just wanted her to be like doing everything and anything possible than actually figure out what's wrong with her and what she actually thinks of herself. And I think for me also chopping the hair, now watching it and seeing what people have to say about it, I think getting rid of the vanity is an amazing aspect to Alison, that it's just gone. Mm. Like her female long hair, her womanly long hair is gone, and she butchered it, and she doesn't care. And it's like it's at a new level of low. And I think also for an audience to watch someone in that state of distress for a whole movie, the visual, I suppose, it being so pleasing to watch the visual of her vanity being destroyed by herself, and yeah. that you're not getting distracted by anything. You're not getting distracted by beauty, or if it's aesthetically pleasing, or if her hair is in a bun or a ponytail or plaits or whatever. It's like you just get to see this person on rock bottom with a raw face and raw hair, basically just falling.
And then when she came to me with that, I was like, that is so brilliant and I love it. Here's the thing. We're shooting in 26 days and we shoot completely out of order. As we tell you, you folks who aren't in the industry, everything's shot out of order. And I said, Florence, that's brilliant, but logistically really impossible. And she took a beat and she's like, you'll figure it out. So then I go to the team and I'm like, you know, the first AD who's in charge of the schedule and everyone, my amazing cinematographer, Mauro Fiori, and, you know, the producer, we're all huddled up. And I'm like, Florence has this great idea. Don't freak out, but I kind of like it, but I know it's going to be hard, but let's. So they huddle for like a couple days and they're like, Zach, here's all the reasons why that's not going to work. And so I go back to Florence and I'm like, Florence, we tried, but it's brilliant, but it's just not going to work on our budget or our scale. She goes, you'll figure it out. And so it was her.
And they figured it out. No, but so it was here her. We are.
Well, there's a great, it made me think of, there's like that awesome Industrial Light and Magic documentary.
I was just gonna say, it's very George Lucas of you.
Yes. I really recommend that to anyone who hasn't seen it. But in that documentary, they talk about how George, when he would come to them and he would say, I want you to do some insane thing. And the animators would be like, that's not possible. And he would just go, think about it. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that what he said? Think on it or
yeah,
think
yeah,
about
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And he would go, just think about it. And they'd come back and go, George, we did huddle. This is impossible. And he goes, all right, just keep thinking about it. And anyway, the point is I want to thank Florence because it did push us to figure it out. And I didn't want to use wigs because
I hate wigs.
Wigs are pretty bad
it
always.
At the moment. The whole point, she chops her hair and then it's gone.
We wanted her to mm-hmm. we wanted to really chop her hair off on camera. And we also didn't want to use wigs because wigs, even with a high budget, are not great. Wigs on a low budget are really bad.
Yeah.
And so when you see her cutting her hair off, it's really Florence cutting her hair off.
Also, just so you know, the whole week up to that, everybody was shit scared. Zach was really worried. He was like, are you sure? Like, how short are we going? Let's do a practice run. And everybody would be checking in with me and being like, are you okay? Are you nervous about it? I'm like, no, I'm so excited. And then people were starting to get a bit confused because I was like completely thrilled about it. And even on the day, Zach was like, okay, so I just want to go over like, where are we going?
Well, the hairstylist came in and I was like, all right, just show her where she should cut. And he was like, she knows. Like, I know, but just let me see.
Right.
You know, because you only have, you know, take one. And we actually had to cut a port in the wall of this house because every single moment of this movie is shot on locations. There's no sets because we just didn't have the money for it. And so we took the medicine cabinet off of the wall and there was no way to get the shot we wanted. So we went to the homeowner and we were like, can we cut a hole in this wall? We'll obviously patch it and make it look brand new. But in order to get the shot we need to cut what's called a camera port in this wall. And they were like, okay, as long as you promise to restore it. And we were like, oh my God, we can't believe they said yes. So so in order to get those shots of Florence looking in the mirror like she does several times in the movie, just a little, for those of you filmmaking geeks out there, we had to cut a hole in the wall. But it turned out perfectly, and it was such a good choice. And that was just one of many examples of Florence.
And I'm a producer.
Saying, I'm a producer. And you did a great job.
Yeah. I'd love to keep her producing. I love it.
Yeah, and talk about filming. I definitely have told her that she should be a director one day and fold that into her
resume.
I'd love
to be a director. I think I need to learn a bit more. I need to soak it up. It's such a tricky position to have and to lead and to be a leader on a film set. You really have to be like, you have to know your shit. And if you don't, a lot of people can get, you know, twisted up by that. And I think for me, I don't want to go in and not know and then and affect an actor badly. Like you just, it's something that you really should go in knowing that you can do. So I think I'm just going to do a bit more learning.
Well, if you ever want to take the Zach Braff Camera Geek Camera Toys Workshop, I will give you a one-on-one.
Great. Thank you.
Because I'm obsessed with it all. I hope you direct, because not only do you have a great vision and intelligence and clear knowledge of acting, but you're a great leader. And I think you'd be a fantastic filmmaker.
Thank you.
So thank you guys for tuning in to this special conversation with Florence Pugh. Our movie, A Good Person, comes out this Friday. It comes out everywhere in United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom. On Friday the 24th.
Really?
So I know of getting a lot of people on social media saying, when in my country, when in my country. I promise you it's coming to all. Australia, I know, is end of April. But all I can say specifically now is this weekend in the United Kingdom and the United States.
Whoa.
It's on, you know, many screens. It's not one of those ones that's on like one screen. It's on lots of screens. So please go check it out. And thank you, Joelle and Daniel, for this awesome conversation.
That was such a lovely chat.
Of course.
It was my pleasure. Thank you guys so much.
It was lovely seeing you guys again.
Truly. It was good to see you too.
I used to see you during the pandemic randomly, every now and then.
Well, remember when you came on and made your. Remember when she came on and made her martini that's basically just cold vodka?
That's what a martini is. It's cold vodka.
It was amazing. Inspiring for us all. In the TV several times.
All right, wonderful. Would you like to count us out? Donald's not here. Would you like to count? You count down from five.
Just really slowly?
No, you just like in tempo, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Oh, so count up from five.
I'm glad to know you're such a fan of the podcast.
I am, but no, you said count down from five.
You did, yeah, like down. 5, 6.
Yeah.
5, 6, 7.
Okay. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Stories about a show we made. About a bunch of dogs and nurses and a janitor who loved to hate. Here's a story that we all should know. So gather round to hear our Scrubs Rewatch Show with Zach and Donald. Mm-hmm.
Did you know that 46% of us don't take all our vacation days? Even though it's been proven that taking time off to play makes us more productive.
In California, no matter where you go, you'll find play. Explore a redwood forest, immerse yourself in art galleries, or just park yourself in a beach chair and chill. Play is everywhere in California, so take some well-deserved play time off and discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, it's simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. You can learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hey guys, I've been telling you about how we are big fans of Tecovas boots. Heritage, tradition, quality, comfort, style, and service are some of the best features of Tecovas. But now they also have a gift for our listeners.
Tecovas will throw in one of their best-selling trucker hats or ball caps free with a minimum purchase of $100 at Tecovas.com.
Just use code REALFRIENDS at checkout. That's REALFRIENDS.
That's TECOVAS.com and point your toes west.